Let's record a show.
Yeah. Oh.
So close. Hello and welcome to What's the Deal, the Seinfeld review show that's dumping Gatorade all over your head. Each week, we dissect every episode of Seinfeld in chronological order. With me today, as always, is Christopher Young.
Hello.
And Patrick Armstrong.
Hello.
I'm Cameron Wong, and this is episode 31, and today we will be looking at season 3, episode 14, The Pez Dispenser. And I didn't make a very big deal about it, but yes, we have completed over 30 episodes now. Patrick, how do you feel about that?
I feel good. Feel pumped.
You ganked?
Ganked. All ganked up.
Nice. It's a big accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
What's ganked?
We've already been over this, Chris.
Have we?
Yeah.
It's like crumping.
Crumping? You mean crunking?
Is it a crump?
No, you're thinking
I think it's crunk.
You're thinking of the little bread.
Yeah, you're thinking of crumpet.
I'm talking about a crumpet.
Oh, okay, then you were right.
Like, you butter and toast it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's delicious.
Oh.
How are you this week, Patrick?
Good. Pretty good. I had a funny experience at my, so I've been, playing squash lately with my friend Aaron. And I go once a week, and, there are, three main types of people who play squash at this club anyway. There's, old, lawyer dudes or, chartered accountants. And they're all various shapes and sizes. There's, young dudes who are, really ambitious seeming. And then there's, private school kids. And so I was...
Which one are you?
I'm a private school kid. And so I was, signing in at the desk, and there was this guy right in front of me, and he was one of the older businessman types. He actually looked like a caricature of a capitalist from the 1930s. he had a big pot belly and a big, mustache that he, waxed the tips of, and he was...
Did he have a monocle?
He didn't, but he could wear a monocle, and it would not look out of place. And tails and a top hat all the time.
Mm.
And so he was in front of me and he was like, so I was around tonight. Is Ian around? Cause he really works me hard. And I was, I was like, Patrick, you know, he just means he's found a workout partner who helps him a lot. And then, or gets him exercising, don't think too much about this. And then I was in the change room with him, and he was just sort of humming to himself, kind of gruffly. He was like, and then he started adding lyrics, and then he was just singing, Ian works my hard, Ian works. He absolutely did. And then he looked over at me and he's like, you played with Ian yet? I was like, no, not yet. he's like, oh man, it's another experience. And then he continued singing a song. Yep. I don't know what the point of the story is, but I just thought it was really strange. And it was a very specific song. And I feel like it's just, this guy is very jolly, but this song...
Ian
and Uncle Pennybags, but it was a funny song, and so I've been humming that song during the week.
Maybe that's what happened to him. Maybe he just heard the song.
Yeah, I don't know if Ian Works Me Hard is a song though.
No, not whips. Works.
I said works. It's regardless. Neither of them are songs.
Chris, did you have any run-ins with Ian this week?
No.
Tell us about your week.
I went and saw Jurassic Park in 3D IMAX.
Oh, JP3DI.
Yeah, it was cool. It's one of my favorite movies. It was interesting because right before I went to Vancouver, like the night I left, I had a late flight. Right before that, I went to see a 70mm screening of 2001. And the two of them are pretty much my favorite movies ever. And so to see both on like very, very large screens within about a month of each other was pretty fun.
Is that 70mm print? That, I guess it must be the one that's sort of touring around North America.
No, actually, the theater out here, TIFF Lightbox, they have their own and they do it every year.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's really, really nice. I was worried because right before I went, I listened to the talk show where he talked about it. Mm-hmm. And he was saying how there's a print that's like all scruffy and bad. And I was like, oh, what if it's not that? What if it's that one? But it wasn't, and I found out they have their own. And it was gorgeous. Like, it was beautifully preserved.
Nice.
Yeah. And Jurassic Park was fun, too.
Now, although, Jurassic Park IMAX, that's just a push, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Now, okay. You went and saw it, too, didn't you?
Yes, and so did Patrick.
Mm-hmm. And both of you in the IMAX?
No. Just normal theater.
Okay, because in the IMAX, you can just really, like, much more so than, say, when... Like Batman Begins was just shot on 35, but they had like an IMAX screening or presentation, which was the same thing. But you can just really tell that this was a movie shot in 1993, and like it looked very blown up, and the 3D looked ridiculous. I thought.
I thought like, the 3D didn't look too bad on a regular screen size. There were a couple parts that were a little awkward, as almost every 3D movie is, but for the most part, it was okay.
I noticed it, and this is mostly with almost all 3D, I noticed the most at the beginning, like when they're bringing the raptor in, all of the people were separated in a way that I thought looked very fake.
I mean, they do kind of arbitrarily... on these post-3Ds, just kind of, well, this is going to be way in the foreground, and this is way in the background.
Yeah.
I actually experimented when we were watching it. If you took off your glasses in certain scenes, mm-hmm. everything that's just kind of, like, in the middle ground of the frame, just what you could see it normally with your glasses off, and then everything in the foreground and the background had the weird blurriness, because that's all they applied the 3D effect to.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and the other thing that's when you see something in the IMAX, when we were right at the back and like it was, you know, it's a gigantic, enormous screen, it just takes up all of your peripheral vision. When someone in front of you stands up in the middle, it's very disorienting. It's like
you
suddenly
forget where you are.
Yeah, like I forget where I am. And it's like, oh, my God. There's a blotch in the universe. I don't know what to do, but it's just someone going to the bathroom.
Isn't that what they specifically warn you about before every IMAX showing?
Yeah, that like the shadows come out and dance, and they're like, don't get up in the movie. Don't get up in the movie. Ian works me hard.
Why is it a shadow?
Because it's not a popcorn, because it's really the popcorn and the drinks, but... In my version, it just looks like a big silhouette.
This is very confusing.
I don't know what's going on anymore. Are we crumping now?
Is that Cameron? How was your week?
It's all right. My voice is a lot better. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Does it sound more normal?
Sounds great.
Chris, what do you think? Normal?
Sounds about right.
It's close, but at the end of the day, because I'm back at work now, my voice still begins to fail as the night wears on, but it's not bad. I got something exciting this week.
What's that?
I got the Dirt Devil Whiskers SV.
That's a vacuum?
It's the Dirt Devil Roomba knockoff.
Oh. So a robot vacuum.
That's right.
Now, why did you get this instead of a Roomba?
It was on sale. It cost about... I don't know, probably 1/6 the cost of a Roomba.
Oh, that's a good reason.
Yeah.
It does. Pretty good, though? It looks very tidy in here. It looks clean in here. I guess you were forced to pick everything up off the floor.
No.
Oh.
I didn't pick anything up off the floor.
Oh, you just let it go?
I just let it go.
It does look very clean in here.
It's did because a good job. It knows what it's doing. We just call it robot here at the house.
Okay.
And we just kind of generally say that robot will take care of something now. So, not that you can see it, but radio, theater of the mind. Imagine a huge pile of cardboard and some cans. That's what's in my kitchen. And it's precarious, to say the least. A breeze would cause it to crash down and fill the surrounding areas. But
it's kind of a heap.
Some might call it a heap. Some may choose to view it as a heap. But regardless, I just said today that we don't need to worry about it anymore. Do you want to know why?
Why is that?
Robot's going to take care of it.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
So that was great. I'm loving Robot.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I don't know. I'm up to the gills in SodaStream stuff right now.
Cool. I want one.
You should see the amount. I've got literally, like, cases and cases of SodaStream stuff. Patrick's seen it. It looks like I'm a hoarder.
It does. It looks like you think that the company is going to go out of business and you won't be able to buy CO2 canisters.
Well, that's not the case, but I tell you, it's a luxury.
You should start putting that Coca-Cola syrup on ice cream or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'd be delicious.
I don't think it would be.
Yeah, actually, like, you know how...
It might be.
You know how you see, like, fancy, like, these challenges where they give, like, some, like, Michelin 3-star chef, like, a McDonald's meal, and they're supposed to reconstruct it?
Yes.
Whenever this happens, they always make a reduction with the Coca-Cola and, like, put it on top of some dessert they made.
All right, well, Patrick, when the show's over today, I'm going to give you a single scoop of ice cream, and I'm going to put some cola sauce on it.
Sounds really good.
All right. I want some.
Sure, Chris. Come on down.
It's not fair.
And while you're at it, make sure that you visit whatsthedealshow.com, where you can check out all the show notes for today's episode, which is episode 14, The Pez Dispenser. And hey, while you're there, maybe we'll have a little picture for you. I don't know. Maybe we won't. I don't guarantee anything. The show's free. Get off my case. Everybody just back off.
Make a photo.
So, in today's episode, The Pez Dispenser, George is dating a pianist. That's right, a pianist. And he is smitten, but he's worried that an incident involving Jerry, Elaine, and a Pez Dispenser may cause the relationship to end, so he makes a desperate move. Kramer, in the meantime, invents a cologne that smells like the beach. And this is an episode that, for some reason, dovetails Kramer's story in, even though it seems to have nothing to do with the main storyline. But I thought it was a good episode, so let's dive into it.
George has no hand.
No hands.
No hands.
He's just got a hook.
Yeah, so the episode starts out with the monologue. And this week, Jerry's talking about women and the funny ways they put on perfume. You know, the different places that men or that women think men are going.
At least it's not women put on perfume like this, men put on perfume like this.
Yeah, I appreciated that he didn't do an extremely hackneyed joke.
I really liked that he described the areas that they put it down as Stratego areas. Why Stratego? Why the board game?
I don't know. I've never played that game. I don't even know.
It sucks. Chris, you ever played Stratego?
No, I never played it. I think maybe I have with you, but I forget what it is.
Yeah, I had Star Wars Stratego.
That's
played
right.
It that one time, though.
Yeah.
Play Stratego, if that's what you were going to ask.
But, I mean, women mostly figure out where they're going to put perfume based on Star Wars.
Yeah.
And a quick little puff by the Sarlacc pit.
What's the Sarlacc pit, Cameron?
Use your imagination, Chris. yeah, so
it's their mouth.
Yeah, I don't really know what there is I don't really know what there is to say about this.
Do you know what the point is of putting the perfume on the wrists? He mentions it.
I think isn't it just because your hands interact with people a lot?
I guess.
I was thinking it's either that. I'm not even sure that women actually put perfume on their hands when they're applying perfume, or they just do that in a department store when they want to see what a perfume smells like.
I'm going to go ahead and say right now that I've seen women preparing you know, in an evening where they're choosing to wear perfume, or I guess in a day. In my world, for whatever reason, women are putting it on at night. But there is this that little wrist rub. I'm doing it live right now.
Yep, Cameron's rubbing his wrists together.
And I don't really know. I mean, it's an exposed area. You're going to be able to smell it.
Yeah, well, my guess is just because your hands are probably the first thing that interact with another person.
Yeah, right? And I mean, I guess it's not like you're going to rub it on your face.
Yeah, or, you know, if a woman shakes a man's hand or something, you know, or if it's a really old-fashioned man, like, she puts out her hand and a man kisses it,
then
you get her scent with the perfume, you know? Oh, that woman smells delicious. Chanel. Or, as Jerry imagined, when a woman slaps a man, a common occurrence.
Far more common, obviously.
You know, you're excited by that scent.
Yeah.
All right, well, strategoing right on.
So George and Jerry are in the apartment. Jerry's in the washroom, and George is talking to him through the door. George is very excited about his new lady friend. She's a pianist.
Oh, pardon me. Sorry.
Oh,
I'm stepping on your lines.
It's all right.
I was just going to say, I really like the way that George performs a piano recital for Jerry.
I don't like it. It's quite excessive.
It's fun.
I like it. I think it's fun.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
He's too excited.
What? So you're saying he shouldn't be excited about his new girlfriend that he likes a lot?
He's going nuts. He's nuts. It's too much.
I like how
the crossword puzzle and everything.
Yeah, the crossword
puzzle. That sounds great.
Have you ever done a crossword puzzle in bed, Chris?
God, no.
I mean, Zoe and I, you know, we haven't done it in a while, but we used to always, well, always is excessive, but we used to do crossword puzzles in bed sometimes.
Cameron, this is a family show, all right?
Yeah, I know. Although, I told Patrick this story a while ago. One time, we were in bed and we're doing a crossword puzzle, and we were both really tired, and we're trying to do this thing, and, you know, I'm doing the crossword, and she fell asleep at some point, and I'm just kind of holding it up, and we're doing it on an iPad. And at some point, I also fell asleep, and as I fell asleep, the iPad, instead of falling away, fell towards me, but Zoe's head was kind of resting on my chest, so I just dropped the iPad directly on her face as she was asleep. So maybe the crossword puzzle in bed on an iPad is actually a danger.
You know, I actually heard someone say that the advantage of the iPad mini is that when they fall asleep and it falls on their head, it doesn't hurt so much.
I believe that.
That's what they say in the commercials. Just drop it on your head. You'll be fine.
So while George is very excited about his new girlfriend, who is named Noel... or Noel?
How did they pronounce
it? It's definitely not Noel.
Okay.
Noel. She's not the brother from Oasis.
So, Noel, George is very excited about her, but he's uncomfortable because she's so brilliant and great and talented. He doesn't have the upper hand in this relationship. Just once he would like the upper hand.
Well, I'm not sure how low in the rungs of society George is going for this. I just like how George's understanding of relationships is 100% a power dynamic. Someone is in charge.
Oh, yeah.
There's a winner, and then there's the hanger-on.
Yeah, it's very strange, this whole attitude. Like, later, when George is so excited, you know, we'll talk about it, but when he gets that upper hand, it's kind of, like, kind of awful. Like,
I mean,
he seems like
disgusting.
He's really excited that he's manipulating her.
It's the worst. It's George's worst.
Yeah. Okay. And so, because George is worried about this situation, he wants the whole gang, well, except for Kramer, he wants Jerry, Elaine, and him to all go out together, you know? Sorry. Cameron just showed me your picture. Okay. So George really wants them to all go together so she can see George in his native environment, you know. He can make jokes.
Manhattan.
They're comfortable with him, the whole thing. And Jerry, you know, he agrees to do this.
Yeah. Do you have anything on that, Chris? I was going to talk about Kramer.
No, I mean, I guess it seems like a if the goal is to get hand, I guess it seems plausible enough to want to have your girlfriend see you with your friends. And I don't know. I actually fail to see how exactly this will win him hand, especially given Jerry's excessive personality. Yeah. Although maybe this is actually almost sets up a later episode when it's a sort of similar situation and George asks him to not be so, funny and entertaining, and he becomes pretends to be all depressed, and that backfires.
Yeah. I mean, this is the beginning of something that Kramer mentions, or not Kramer, that George mentions many times, that he feels that he has a better group dating dynamic.
Yeah.
I don't know in what world do you have a better group dating dynamic.
I don't know. Yeah, it sounds like a bad idea. It's just basically seems like George does not relate well to women, and so he just wants to show them that he can relate to anyone in the world, and that maybe she'll think that there's hope. But yeah, speaking of Kramer, Kramer has joined a polar bear club, and he has a Pez dispenser.
I love Pez.
Yeah, they're delicious.
Absolutely. This episode... character. Yeah, this episode, I think, when I was a kid, was responsible for spurning my Pez collection. I had a little bit of a collection when I was younger.
Yeah, you know, I don't have a Pez dispenser on the go right now, but it made me want to go get one. You know?
Yeah. Tweety Bird?
Tweety Bird?
I mean, I loved Daffy. My Star Wars Pez.
I had lots of Star Wars Pez. I think I had about 30, by the time I stopped collecting Pez dispensers.
You waited until it got embarrassing.
Oh, no. It was far past that.
I do like how the Pez dispenser came from the flea market and Jerry's not freaked out by it, though. I thought, later season Jerry would be too off-put by a flea market Pez dispenser.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Yeah, I do like how George doesn't know what a flea market is.
What is a flea defender?
Sorry, what a flea market is?
I thought the part was hilarious.
And, George is trying to play it off like he knows what it is. But, Jerry knows what's going on. He knows that he thinks that there's fleas hanging out at the flea market.
I really like how, even after what happened to George in the last episode, where he's essentially robbed and humiliated, that Jerry continues to call him Biff.
I know.
Yeah, actually, Jerry's a real turd in this episode.
A very sensitive man.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that I can distinctly remember being a kid and watching this episode and not wanting to pipe up and be like, I kind of think there's fleas there too, because they don't ever actually say, no, that's not what happens at a flea market, George, just this sort of thing. They just make fun of him for it. And I remember watching him being like, come on, so tell me what it really is.
And they did some sort of great secret been let into.
Yeah, what did you think a flea market was?
I thought fleas.
What does that mean? Like,
I don't know.
Selling...
I was a kid.
Fleas selling their wares, artisanal
maybe
poop.
Like flea circus or something, but with like Omar. I don't know. I don't know. When I was a kid and I watched Seinfeld, I got most of the sex jokes, but I didn't know what that was still. I was an odd kid.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the first time I heard of the flea market, I think someone just explained to me right then and there what it is. Oh, we're going to go to the flea market. It's, we're going to go to that place where we buy fleas. And then I went there and I was disappointed.
For a minute you did.
I can't say that for sure.
You're disappointed to see, people selling old Sega Genesises and stuff. Maybe Atari 2600s at that time.
Is that a Genesis or a Genesi?
Genesis.
It's a murder of Segas.
A
Parliament of Nintendos.
Hmm.
So the next scene, you know, George has been successful in convincing Elaine and George to go to...
Jerry.
Or Elaine and Jerry to go to the recital. And they're there, you know. I think George thinks Jerry's going to embarrass him. You know, he's worried, you know, that Jerry will start clapping at the wrong time. A common occurrence for rookie recital goers.
I mean, I always feel bad any time when someone starts clapping and they're not supposed to yet. Like, the song quiets down for a second and there's that guy like... And the band starts playing again right away. Is that when you're at,
you know, what? Glenn Miller.
Oh, it's the Glenn Miller show. Okay. Yeah. Thought we were going back to Scat Fest.
What do you guys do for fun over there?
This is it. We just scat. We hang around the table and scat. That's why we call it Scat Town.
That meant something else.
Easy to beat. The recital starts, and, you know, Jerry starts popping some Pez as he's enjoying the recital, and then he puts the dispenser on Elaine's bag.
I mean, it is really funny looking, just sitting there. It's like 2001, it's like the monolith of comedy, sitting there on Elaine's lap.
Yeah, I've seen this episode so many times, and just the sight of... that Pez dispenser there. Pretty funny.
And Julia Louis-Dreyfus does such a good job in this scene. Because if you've ever seen any of the outtakes where she can't control her laughter, it's just like that. Mm-hmm. It's one-to-one. It's incredible.
I bet it was kind of funny to see that Pez dispenser on your lap there. You know? Well, she knows what the scene's going to be, but I still think it would be funny.
And when you have that infectious moment, like in real life, where you're not supposed to be laughing and you just can't help but laugh. It's amazing, but it's just like you cannot stop. No matter how much you want to stop, you can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
In the commentary tracks, Seinfeld talks about, to this day, when he does stand-up, people leave Pez dispensers on the stage for him.
Oh, that's nice.
That's fun.
Yeah.
You know, actually, talking about how, like, can't stop laughing. I'll make it short, but our guest host, you remember our guest host, Justin, right?
Who?
No.
His name is Justin.
Oh, Justin.
Justin.
Justin. This Justin.
Like this Justin?
No, that Justin.
Hey.
But you might not know this, but Patrick Armstrong has several brothers, and Justin has a twin brother.
What?
It's true.
Justin is Patrick's brother?
What? We've been over this. If you had listened to those shows while you were gone, you would know this.
Check the show notes. On the show notes, we post all the birth certificates. We've released their birth. They were both born in...
the Foothills Hospital, Calgary, Alberta.
Oh, I was...
I want the long firm certificate.
I'm pretty sure you were born in, well, not Hawaii at the very least.
Kenya?
Maybe. Either way, we were all in a university class together, so this was obviously a while ago. And it was Halloween, and we might not have talked about this on the show, but I basically don't participate in Halloween. I eat the candy, but that's about it. I don't like the costumes and the makeup. But
you do some scowling.
I mean, it's more of a unsubtle frown. Regardless, this other brother is a big fan of British humor, that dry, witty sense of humor. And what would be subtler than walking into class dressed as Charlie Chaplin? And he was so late. And he kind of came in, he had that little Charlie Chaplin waddle sort of walk going on and whatever, and there was like nobody else in the class dressed up. So just came in Charlie Chaplin, dressed totally normally, and I tell you, I just lost it. And I couldn't stop. I was there, I was trying to look outside, but, like, it's just, like, heaving up. Like, I almost had to throw up laughter, and I just couldn't stop. And eventually, just like Elaine, I just had to try and force my way out. But I was on, like, the far side of the room. I was cutting through rows. Oh, man, that was so great.
Okay, now, knowing Stuart, let me ask you this. Was he Charlie Chaplin, or, you know, was he Hitler?
No, it was Charlie Chaplin.
How much do you look like Hitler?
No, probably not at all.
No, I saw him that day. You know, he was a pretty good Charlie Chaplin. It was funny, though. That day, when Cameron got out of the classroom...
Oh, right.
He called me immediately, and so I picked up the phone, and I think I didn't have caller ID, and so I just picked up the phone, and it was just laughter, like crazed heavy breathing and laughter. Like, there was laughter, and then, yeah, just heavy breathing, because I guess Cameron was out of breath, and I was like, who is this? Okay, what is this? Okay, I'm hanging up, and you're like, no, it's Cameron. Like, just barely keeping it together, barely staying alive.
I don't
think
it sounded quite like, you know, whatever that was that you were doing there, one of your anonymous phone calls.
It's a hobby.
It's quite the hobby.
Wow, I took that right off track.
But anyway, yeah, this, when you're in this experience and you can't stop laughing, especially when it's an inappropriate situation, it's so difficult. And Elaine, she manages about as well as she can. And I love how Jerry just kind of looks like, I don't know what her deal is. I'm not taking any responsibility.
Did you notice that Elaine literally takes the longest way out? They're, like, maybe 6 seats away on the left. Nope, stadium by the right.
Mm-hmm.
Questionable decision. Questionable.
So when Elaine gets outside and, like, gets her laughs out, this dude, who I guess she knows, John Malika...
Dude's a good way to describe him.
Yeah, he's kind of a creep. Like, he puts his arm around her immediately. He's like, what, was it something I said?
I mean...
That made you laugh so much?
But the less creepy man, it almost would have been charming.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, you know, they get talking, and he's obviously into her. Very uncomfortable. And, you know, comes around to hearing that their friend Richie, who I guess they know from some old days, is a real druggie. And, you know, Elaine proposes an intervention. And Jerry needs to be there.
What is his obsession with Jerry? He delivers this line about how Jerry needs to be involved with the intervention.
It's odd.
Jerry would have to be there. He really respects Jerry. But how much can you respect him? He didn't even offer to do some robberies with him.
Yeah, you know, it's actually kind of like this guy John has a crush on Jerry, and he just wants to see Jerry.
I agree.
He's just trying to figure out some situation.
I was surprised when he asked Elaine out.
You know, speaking of people named John and respecting people, after the last week's episode aired, it's just a total aside, I got this text message on my phone in the morning one day, and I just picked it up. I didn't see who it was from, and it just said, do you want to do some robberies? And I know how last week we talked about how I was afraid that this guy would just show up. Honestly, my heart skipped a beat for a second, and then I looked and I saw the name, and it was okay again. But, man, terrifying. Anyhow.
For the record, I want to do some robberies.
Well, just... ride the SkyTrain right around closing time.
Yeah, just call Cameron's friend up.
But anyhow, so Elaine's got the dirt on this, and this recital is only 2 minutes long, because while Elaine is still outside talking to this guy, which has lasted maybe a couple minutes, we cut back inside and they're clapping. It's over.
Yeah, Jerry makes Tweety the Pez dispenser clap. Pretty funny.
Why is he doing this, though?
He just thinks it's hilarious. It's an impulse.
Poor George.
Yeah, George is pretty upset.
I mean, poor George to a certain extent.
Yeah. And so after the show, George predictably is furious. And, you know, Elaine convinces Jerry to do this intervention. And then they go into the dressing room. Noelle, predictably, is humiliated.
She's the worst.
I like how the backstage area of this place just looks like they're in a hockey rink. Like you're at the local pool, rec center. It looks like a high school. But, I mean, outside, it was very nice.
Mm-hmm.
What would you guys do? You know, George is concerned, before they go in to go see Noel, that...
Noel.
I cracked myself up.
Gallagher.
So before they go to see Noel, that he says, you can't say anything. And Elaine wants to go in there and apologize. What do you think is the correct approach?
Break up with her. She's the worst. She sucks. I don't like her.
All right, Patrick?
It's a tough
one. Offer a Pez.
He did.
Oh, good job.
Honestly, I'm not sure what the best approach is here. Maybe apologizing, you know, and trying to diffuse it right away before it has time to fester is a good idea. But I think Elaine thinks she can get away with it.
But she doesn't really want to. Yeah. She wants to apologize. Because, I mean, what's going to happen? If it works out, she's never going to laugh around George's girlfriend for, like, the rest of her life.
I don't know. I think George is thinking about the short term.
Well, I'm not sure what the right call is, but whatever ends up happening, it goes downhill pretty quickly here.
Yeah. I really like how Jerry, even though this is totally his fault, really lays into Elaine, you know, and says she's, you know, like, only, like, a real, like, nut job, or, what was it?
A mental defective.
Yeah, mental defective would laugh during a recital.
I like how he calls Elaine a so-called mental defective.
Yeah. Like, what? He caused this, and he's laying into Elaine and trying to make her feel bad.
Well, she shouldn't have laughed.
Did you also notice that George has an amoeba tie in the scene?
I did not notice, but I looked at your notes and saw that.
Yeah, I wrote it in all caps.
If one of you guys want to get a screen cap when they're talking in the hallway, I did notice that there's a weird picture of three dudes with huge hair on the message board behind Jerry and Elaine as they discuss the intervention. Very, very strange.
Is this it, so?
Yeah, it kind of looks like proto Backstreet Boys of the 80s, 90s.
Oh, I see what you're talking about.
Yeah, they're like, I think they're wearing denim too.
One of them's wearing a lot of denim. It's pretty much got the Canadian tuxedo going.
They
look cool.
And it's, even though obviously you pay attention to the actors, it seemed like it was featured so prominently.
They look like Aha.
It's kind of like that photo of Jerry in the diner when they were in Florida, with the bulldog or whatever. That was really strange. And when, maybe if you're watching the original SD version, not so bad, but if you see it in HD, like on TV or something, it is so distracting. It's just like that one episode where they did a establishing shot of the street, and it was like, I forget what it said, like triple sex now or something.
More sex now or something like that. Yeah, more sex now.
Like, so distracting. And so Noelle is not up for going out afterwards. And
she's all high-strung and worried and concerned about the laughing.
Very high-strung. And
she seems like she'd be awful even without this whole thing having happened. But you would want to do a crossword puzzle with this woman in bed.
But you haven't, I can't seen even her, imagine it. You haven't seen her when she's not stressed out and furious. No one is really fun to hang out with when they're angry and upset.
Well, and after they feel like they failed at something.
Yeah. You're awesome. Fun to hang out with after you're upset.
And after it failed. Totally.
I do think it is kind of a shame that we don't get to see her in any sort of light, because George talks about how great she is, and maybe, you know, that's, it just works. But I think you see it for a moment when George is breaking up with her and she's really trying to, like, placate him.
Yeah.
But apparently...
Did you say placate instead of placate? You say placate?
Yeah.
It's wrong.
I think either pronunciation is fine.
I don't think so. talking about...
So, in the coffee shop, we see the gang, and they're just kind of talking about this intervention, and Jerry still is kind of on edge about it, and talks about how maybe the reason that this guy Richie turned to drugs is...
Placate. Placate.
Oh. That's right.
Yeah, but look at the second pronunciation. Look at the second pronunciation.
I don't care. Let's hear it.
Yeah, the second one in IPA is placate.
Yeah, it's wrong. As in, this is what not to say.
Placate.
Yeah, that's right. I love to play with Kate.
So in this coffee shop, Jerry tells the story about why he thinks this guy Richie is all up in drugs is... because
notice what side of the table they're on? They're on the wrong side.
Yeah, and so Kramer is... I guess they were all in a baseball team together. And Kramer convinces this guy Richie to dump Gatorade on this guy on their team, a like club owner.
Marty Benson.
Marty Benson. To dump this Gatorade on his head. And I guess this guy was pretty old and eventually died of pneumonia. From
complications from a cold or something?
Yeah, from this Gatorade. And Kramer, he's fine, but Richie, he was never the same.
I just get the feeling that Jerry's story is not that impressive because I feel like Kramer's probably gotten many people into drugs, both indirectly and indirectly.
Yeah.
Did you say indirectly and indirectly?
And directly.
I feel like you said indirectly twice.
You're really on Cameron's case today, huh?
Definitely. Yes.
Sorry, Jerry.
Back at the apartment, you know, we see Jerry agree to hold the intervention. Kramer comes in. He wants in.
He does. And he's proud of the fact that he was the guy that caused the pneumonia almost. He's like, I'm the guy that told him to do that.
Yeah, I really like that. Like, he's so cavalier talking about how that guy got killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how he ruined this guy's life.
Yeah.
He had it coming.
Oh, totally. You guys are a jerk.
Did you guys notice that Kramer had a pretty cool shirt in this scene?
His pink shirt?
Yeah, it was pink and had, like, this little, like, painted flower on it.
I liked it better before you see the flower. When he turns and you can see the flower, it's not quite as exciting.
Oh, I like the flower. Earlier, Kramer was asking Jerry to smell, his arm, and I guess he was at the beach and really liked this smell, which is, I guess happened after he joined the polar bears. So Kramer proposes a cologne idea. He calls it the beach. When you spray it on, you smell like the beach.
I can get behind that.
Yeah, I think it's a good smell coming back from the beach.
I mean, the problem is that I think this guy is thinking of the pier. Or, yeah. I mean, I know I'm jumping ahead, but I think the backlash is that people are getting the pier or, like, the ocean smell confused with the beach.
Or, like, a fish cannery or something.
Yes, the fish cannery.
But Jerry thinks it's a good idea and convinces Kramer to call this dude who works at Calvin Klein.
It's quite a connection.
Yeah.
It's quite a convenient connection, who also is friends with Richie somehow.
Yeah. It's a whole network.
They're all tied up in this dirty little mess.
Manhattan elite. And so George comes in, and he thinks it's over with Noelle. He tried to call her the other day, and he had a list of things to talk about. Which I think is a pretty good list. Number one, he's good at going in reverse in his car.
That's a rare skill.
It is. I'm really bad at going in reverse in the car.
You're bad at going forwards in your car.
I'm bad at driving in general, it's true. Especially bad at going in reverse. And also, why isn't the drink Postum more popular? Do you guys know what Postum is? I have no idea.
I have no idea.
It sounds like a medicine. Maybe that's why it's not very popular.
Well, George talks about a cough medicine called Potessum in the Hamptons. But I don't know that that's the same thing, because they don't sound the same at all. Postum drink was the first hit on... So it's a powdered roasted grain beverage often used as a coffee substitute. Hmm. It's caffeine-free, and it's made by Postum Cereal Company.
Okay.
And the founder was a student of John Harvey Kellogg. So there you go.
Postum is the perfect family alternative to coffee and other caffeinated beverages. Experience the rich, savory flavor that comes from pure whole grains. Buy now. This sounds awful. I think the reason that it's not very popular is that it's worse than coffee and is awful.
Well, you haven't tried it. You're the try guy. You're the guy that was eating out of a dumpster last week.
And you want to post it? How the hell can you think that was okay, but not some drink whatever?
Because, I don't think this is
What if
is
we put
bad...
it in the garbage first? Will
I
it suddenly
would eat it.
Take on some sort of like, oh, now I'm going to drink that?
I don't think it's necessarily a bad drink. I just think when you have coffee, why not just drink coffee instead of a substitute?
Well, because it's not coffee. It's an alternative to coffee.
Okay, I don't know. If you guys get some Postum, I'll try it.
I mean, I already knew that.
But I just imagine that it's worse than coffee, and that's the reason it's not very popular. The same reason Carob isn't very popular. The reason is it's worse than chocolate.
But you like Carob.
No, I don't.
You do. You just said you like Carob.
It's okay, but it's not
He's
as good
already
as chocolate.
Backpedaling.
If something has Carob in it, that's fine. But if it had chocolate in it, it would be better.
You know what I say about this, Patrick?
Yeah, so anyway, things are not going well with Noel, and Kramer has an intriguing idea. He proposes a preemptive breakup.
Now, Larry David says that he did this and that it worked flawlessly.
Huh? So what happened?
He said he had a lot of hand afterwards.
Great advice from a man that's only been divorced 3 times.
Yeah. I'm thinking about breaking up with my girlfriend just to see what happens. And I like her. But, you know, who knows?
Seems like a bad idea, Chris. It seems like the result will be you will be broken up.
I mean,
I don't know if I have hand or not, though. That's the thing.
The thing is, you don't need hand in a relationship. It is two people who enjoy each other's company and want to be together. It's not like a power
Patrick.
Play. You're not Patrick Bateman.
Patrick, you sound like a man with no hand.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe I have no hand.
I don't think I have any hand either.
I have 2 hands.
Well, Cameron, what do you think of this idea?
I just think that he either wants to be with her or he doesn't, and so he should either break up with her and break up with her or just try and make it work. So if he thinks they're going to break up and he's that miserable, just let it go. Why would he be with somebody who he's concerned that there's a power struggle with in the relationship?
He should break up with her because she sucks.
But if he wins that power struggle, he'll be the winner of the relationship.
Yeah.
It's a challenge.
Like in the Olympics.
Wait, yeah.
Is that still in the Olympics?
Relationships?
Yeah.
No.
Oh.
Yeah, so anyway, George decides to enact this plan. And at the coffee shop, they're having lunch. George breaks up with her. And he says it in a weird way. He's like, I'm breaking up with you.
Yeah.
Are you doing the owl, Mr. Owl, from the how many licks does it get to the
one? Two. Three licks to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop.
Oh, boy. I mean, it works surprisingly well, but I think George is initially doing it because it's almost like that one for the money, two for the show when you're jumping into the cold lake. I don't think George was totally ready to do it until, like, the moment he was saying it, and then he just had to go with it. But, I mean, George is unbearable in this scene. He's posturing so much, he's so proud of himself, and then he's basically... he has the most unreasonable request of her to make their relationship work.
Yeah, he's like, when you're playing and performing, do you think about me when I'm playing? The most difficult thing I do in my life?
No. He wants her to think about him all the time.
Yeah, it's creepy. He's being such a controlling...
he's the worst.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Well, apparently she's the worst, according to you.
She is the worst.
I like how measured against George... who tries to break up with her just to gain the upper hand in the relationship and then asks her to think about him all the time, she's the terrible one.
He wants the relationship to be based on manipulation.
Oh, but she's, like, so, like, I'll do whatever you want.
Because she's down on... She, you know, she just had this bad performance where someone laughed at her. Her boyfriend's breaking up with her. She thought things were going so well. They're doing the crossword together. It's fun.
Yeah.
And he's breaking up with her. It's the last thing in her life.
How is she the worst when she's saying she'll do anything?
Get some confidence, Blondie. Play better. Toughen up. All right? Everyone likes Pez. You guys are looking at smutty American Apparel ads too right now, right?
What? No.
No.
What are you talking about?
I don't know.
What? You do
I found this thing on BuzzFeed called the 28 most racist American Apparel ads ever. I don't see how they're racist, but they're pretty smutty.
Well, it sounds about right. So next,
thanks for listening to What's the Deal.
Next, we see Kramer at Calvin Klein. Kramer pitches the beach and, the Calvin Klein guy, he just thinks it's dumb.
I really like how Kramer is kind of like hopping around the office with these huge strides, grasping at the air very dramatically as he pitches this.
It's a good pitch.
It is a good pitch, yet at the same time, I really felt like I was watching a business meeting between two low-level 80s businessmen.
Well, I mean, this is only 91? 2? 91?
Two?
Yeah, I don't know. Early 90s, so, you know, it's still got that, 80s business guy momentum. But yeah, the Calvin Klein guy, he thinks it's dumb. I think he's making a big mistake, but...
me too. Yeah.
Well, and eventually he also becomes aware that he's making a big mistake, as we may remember in a future episode, Calvin Klein starts selling The Beach.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1992 right now, by the way.
So, then back at the apartment, it's the intervention.
Oh.
The dude, the creepy dude with the tissue in his nose, he's hitting on Elaine with this tissue in his nose. I don't know why he thinks this is a good idea.
I mean, I don't know why your nosebleeds is a bad pickup technique.
I don't know why he's letting so much of this tissue stick out of his nose, you know?
Well, he's got to get it back out.
He can get it back out if there's less of it poking out. And Elaine, predictably, is not impressed. There's this total turd of a guy who is just being a jerk to Jerry for no reason about ice. He's upset that there's no ice for soda. I don't really know what this has to do with anything, but he's like, I can't drink this. It's warm.
He's a jerk.
He really is, and yet... I kind of like how unreasonably angry he is and the way he, like, dramatically slams the can down onto, I guess, Jerry's table.
Yeah.
He's mad.
He really wants that ice.
I mean, it's refreshing.
Yeah.
Who would say no to ice?
So then Kramer shows up, and he shows up. People are kind of upset because they think it should only be for close friends. And he's like, I was the guy who told him to dump that Gatorade on
Marty Benson's head.
And then they're like, all right, you're close enough friends. But then But then he invites up all his polar bear swimming dudes.
Yeah, I'm not sure why Kramer would bring them there. What were they going to be doing?
What's this, a party?
I do love the polar bear guy, though. I love his kind of proto-American Apparel hoodie. And I love just, like, his perfect, like, dad grandpa humor.
I love his zest for life. He's great. And he, like, when they talk about an intervention, he's like, oh, we used to do this with the polar bears who stopped coming. We're like, what? You don't want to be a polar bear? He's great. I love him.
I don't want to be a polar bear. I don't understand. Like, would you guys ever do that? The jump in the freezing water thing?
Is there any sort of reward in it for me?
God, no.
I might be convinced to try it, but it just seems awful.
Oh, it seems awful. Yeah.
It would have to be someone who is really enthusiastic about it and, like, goading me into it. And then I might, you know, if they called me chicken.
I mean, my inclination is to not do it because it seems awful.
It seems awful. And where are they even doing this in New York? Like, the East River? Like, I know that Kramer swims in that, but they make a big deal about how disgusting that is. Where are they polar bear swimming in New York City?
I don't know. We said the beach, so maybe Coney Island or something? You know, any of the beaches?
So, let me just go ahead and cut in, because our polar bear actor's name is Alan Bloom, okay? Or okay. Bloomfield, Alan Bloomfield. And I just wanted to give you guys a little sampling of some of the things he was in. So, in 2006, he was in the movie Crank.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
I think it's got, like, Jason Statham in it. Yeah, it's a Jason Statham movie.
Okay.
He was in Old School, ER... Mad About You, The Nanny, Seinfeld, oh, and Golden Girls. And how about his first movie appearance in The Erotic Adventures of Zorro?
Nice.
In that movie, Zorro wanted to stop being a polar bear swimmer.
It was made in 1972. It's unrated. And it has a 4.4 on IMDb. And the plot description is an adults-only retelling of The Legend of Zorro.
Oh, I'm Googling it right now.
Do you think he was Zorro?
It's the first movie rated Z, says the poster. It's a comedy of Eros.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it's available on DVD through Something Weird Video.
Don't worry, I'm watching the trailer right now.
So we'll put this in the show notes. What's it called again?
The Erotic Adventures of Zorro.
Of Zorro. So far, it's just a bunch of dudes in sombreros.
Erotic?
No. No.
So, moving on from the polar bear guys, everyone's starting to get a little bit nervous.
Oh, there's the erotic.
About yep. what they're supposed to do.
There we go.
When the intervention begins.
Yeah.
And in the panic, when everyone's complaining about who's talking and who's not, Elaine just shouts, everybody hide.
Yeah, like, like it's a surprise party.
I love the idea of a surprise intervention where everyone's hidden and it seems like something really happy is happening. And it's like, surprise, you're ruining your life. And I won't be a part of it.
Yeah, how do you do an intervention? How do you get people over there without them kind of realizing beforehand?
It is basically a surprise party, but
yeah, terrible. Exactly.
I don't know if you've ever seen, I hate this show with a passion because it's just terrible. I don't know, it's hard to watch. I find it really difficult to watch real people's suffering and potentially life-ending decisions on television, but there's a TV show on A&E called Intervention, where it's basically a reality show about people who have lost it all through all sorts of problems, and they hold a last chance intervention. And that's what
awful.
They like the dad or whoever gets in the car with, you know, his son or his daughter that's hooked on drugs and has wasted everything. And they go to the house and everyone's there. And then just the first part is you have to like try and get them to stay because immediately they're concerned and you either break through with them and they're like, okay, I'm going to go to rehab. Or basically the technique is that you say you're going to cut off all communication with them forever.
That's awful. That's a show?
That's a show. It's a reality TV show.
Isn't that show really popular?
It's extremely popular. I can't believe that people want to watch that.
Who does that?
Well, I mean, if a person...
No, I mean, like, who's gotta tune in...
Oh, yeah.
You know, Thursday at 9 so we can see who gets off to rehab. It's awful.
Observe people's most horrible moments in their lives.
Oh, the absolute lowest. It's like, I actually have on... I recorded it off TV years ago. Do you guys remember it was a very short-lived game show called The Moment of Truth, I think it was called.
No, I've never heard of it.
You ever heard of this, Chris? And on this show, what happens is that beforehand, the person takes a lie detector test, and they ask them a series of questions, and then live when they're filming it.
Maybe I have heard of this.
Like a significant other of some sort, a parent, a spouse or whatever, answer how they think the questions are going to come out. The person who answered the questions has to say what the answer is. And if they answer truthfully, that lines up with the lie detector results, then they get more money. And you kind of like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, you can stop and bank your money at some point. And there was one episode which they ended up re-airing, and I taped it because it was so reprehensible, perhaps. This woman on this game show admitted to like cheating, having an affair, not caring about having done it and all this stuff, and continued with the show just to make the money. And her like support family and people who were there were like asking her to stop, like, don't do this anymore, and she just kept going with it to win the money.
Did she win?
She did win a certain amount of money before she eventually stopped. I can't imagine where the questions were going.
But what are the stakes here? Like, are you winning like $10,000 or something?
I think you could win up to $250,000 or something.
Is this worth ruining all the relationships in your life? I guess for this woman it was.
It was, but I mean, she can even go the whole way. And sometimes the idea is that like you can't even you don't even know what your true answer is going to be, and you end up embarrassing yourself. So it'd be like, would you cheat on your wife? And you'd be like, of course I wouldn't. It's like, well, the lie detector said you would. Sorry, you've been eliminated. You get no money now. And whatever just comes along with the results of that information.
Why would you be on this show?
Well, it didn't last more than part of a season, but whew, tasteless.
Yeah.
So, back at this intervention, they're all waiting around, and
whom?
The polar bear guy starts telling kangaroo anecdotes. You know, it's like an extended joke, and eventually it comes to the male kangaroos, because they don't have a pouch, have pouch envy for the female kangaroos, because, you know, they've got stuff to carry around, too. And so they're jealous of the female kangaroos, and, George and Noel have arrived, and, they're hanging out, and Elaine starts laughing at these kangaroo analogs. Wait, actually, I want to say first, isn't this kangaroo joke, isn't that like a total Larry David joke?
I like it how is. You told us to wait as you cut yourself off in your own story.
It is,
don't
though.
You, don't you think so? Like, don't you think you could
he
hear...
He mentioned
like,
it in the commentary.
Oh, really? Yeah, like Larry David telling this joke in Curb Your Enthusiasm or something.
Yeah.
And someone being like, what are you talking about?
He said it was an old stand-up bit of his, and he's like, this guy does it better than I did, though.
It's pretty good. I like it.
This is also the point when Jerry says in the commentary, he's like, I can't believe the network was worried about the show being too Jewish.
Oh, I remember that. I've watched this commentary track before. I always thought that was a really funny joke.
Yeah, so Elaine is laughing at this guy's joke, and Noelle hears. She's furious.
Yeah, she's mad.
Yeah.
She pinpoints the sound.
You know, she yells at Elaine. Elaine points out Jerry was the one with the Pez dispenser.
And Noelle accepts this and immediately turns on Jerry.
Yeah, Elaine does a good job of deflecting that fury. Goes back to Jerry. You know, Jerry doesn't really have anywhere to push this fury. And then eventually, you know, it just sort of peters over to George.
He lied to her.
She breaks up with him.
She points at him with his middle finger. I don't know if I trust people that point with their middle finger.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Neither did the network censor.
Heyo.
Nice.
Yeah, and there's kind of a real sitcom-y joke here when George says, you know, but I've got hand. And Noelle says, and you're gonna need it.
Heyo.
And the audience goes like, woo! Yeah, and that's it. It's over.
I mean, I think the first time I heard that joke, I thought it was really funny, but it's really played out for me. It hasn't had the lasting power of, like, the panties joke.
Mm-hmm.
Or, say, like, the baby toe, your Batman story.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, this joke, it doesn't have the sort of legs.
Yeah, and so we cut, and it's back at the apartment. The intervention's over, and Jerry, in sort of the epilogue of the episode, recounts the story of the intervention. I guess it started poorly. And then Richie spots the Pez dispenser and tells this whole story. He was in the car, his father was loading a Pez dispenser as he was driving. The dad loses control, they crash into a high school cafeteria. There's Pez all over the car. The dispenser is destroyed almost beyond recognition. And Jerry gave him the Pez dispenser. Next day, he checks into a rehab clinic. Hooked on Pez.
And now he's a diabetic.
Yeah.
I think this joke is funny. I especially love the hooked on Pez part. But I don't see how the Pez dispenser would be so destroyed. I feel like it would just fly around.
That part is a joke. He just wanted to make the joke that is destroyed almost beyond recognition, I think.
Israel. Seinfeld documentary.
What is the point of this story? Did his whole life's trauma start with this car accident? Is that what the implication is?
Yeah, I was expecting that to be the reason he got on drugs. But then it's like, no.
Do you think they just want to have a callback and a final thing to do with the Pez dispenser? That's what it is?
Maybe.
I don't know.
And then there's the real setup for George saying, what's a three-letter word for candy?
Mm-hmm. And as Jerry Tesserio says, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. The ending of this episode, a little weak, I have to say.
That's probably putting it gently.
Yeah. And then there's the final monologue where Jerry's talking about jawbreakers.
I used to love a jawbreaker, although I was always afraid I was going to choke on it.
I was afraid I was going to break my teeth.
Yeah, I was afraid I was going to break my teeth too.
Because they're so big, you know, and you like want to be able to put the whole thing in your mouth. You know, I was worried it would get stuck in there like a billiard ball or something.
I just want to put that out of context as the intro to this week's episode.
Ian works me hard.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I don't know. You got any thoughts on the jawbreaker, Chris?
No, I never liked them very much.
You didn't like those hard cement balls?
No.
Ian works me hard.
Works me hard.
Oh, boy.
All right, well, Chris, what did you think of this episode overall? Sum it up.
Overall, I think it's pretty good. Yeah,
Patrick?
I think all this stuff's pretty good.
I think just for the scene where you see that Pez dispenser on the purse, and for the kangaroo joke, I think this episode is worthwhile. I think they were able to, like, handle the structure of the episode a lot better than the previous episode, like the subway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I think it all flowed together pretty well. There were a few rough bits, but overall, it was well done, I think. So I enjoyed it a lot. I really liked the polar bear swimming guy. He was the best.
And they packed so much into this episode.
Yeah. And they set up future jokes with the beach, you know?
Yeah.
They recurred the Biff joke.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing with the bartender went nowhere. Like, suddenly he's asking her out, and that happens, like, on screen. Like, that whole thing just suddenly seemed like a setup for something that never went anywhere. Like, for no joke.
I mean, the joke is there. The joke is there when he asks her if she won't go out with him because he's a bartender. And then if it's because he has tissue up his nose.
I guess.
I mean, to be honest, I think the payoff for that was relatively good. He served a purpose and he got a couple, like, they got a couple jokes out of it.
I guess.
What do you think, Cameron?
I thought it was a pretty good episode. You know what? The opening moments of this episode, very, very strong. Very, very strong episode in terms of, like, its first 15, maybe, like, 12 minutes in terms of, like, pacing and, like, quantity of jokes in there. I feel like the end part of the episode's a little weak. Maybe slightly more misses than hits. But overall, pretty good. And for season 3, a surprisingly funny episode. So now we shall move into other business, that part of the show where we delve into the weird and the esoteric news of the day. And I tell you what, if you want to follow along, head over to whatsthedealshow.com. We have the link for today's other business topic, which is the story about the Japanese girlfriend coat, which hugs and whispers to lonely students.
All right, let's see this.
Now, that is just the headline. So hopefully that headline's got you excited. So 3 students from the University of Tsukuba in Japan have created a device called the Raiju coat, or fulfillment coat, to let their lonelier peers experience the sensation of being hugged from behind by a giggling, breathless female. So it just looks like a normal coat, and you wear it, and you fasten a belt, and you pop on these headphones. And what happens is that the belt that you fasten on the coat has 2 robotic pincers, and there's a motor strap to it. And what happens is that through the headphones you're wearing, you hear the sound of footsteps running up from behind you. And then all of a sudden, the pincers engage and squeeze, simulating a woman's embrace. And then a pre-recorded voice, sourced from a popular anime actress, whispers, "I'm sorry, were you waiting?" or "Guess who?" And so the project, the developer says that if he has a girlfriend, he thinks it is a good situation that she suddenly hugs him when he is waiting for her at the station. The concept of this device is everyone can get the feeling of having a girlfriend. Patrick, what do you think?
I'm horrified, I guess. I'm also intrigued that someone else invented a robotic butt for you to spank.
Yeah,
someone else in Japan.
We should pop that in the show notes as well. There's actually a video that you can watch. And that one, the robotic butt twitches.
I'm watching this right now. Why wasn't this other business?
I guess we'll talk about that one later. We'll talk about this coat first. What is wrong
with Japan?
Well, I mean, what is wrong with anyone that...
Like, no, what's wrong with Japan? Really?
People are unable to relate to one another and provide this very, like, basic relationship. That people are inventing these coats so robot pincers can hug you and you can listen to someone on USB headphones. Do you think this actually works? Is this the only thing it does?
Is it
the pincers squeeze you and it says,
"I'm sorry, were you waiting?" And contains an audio file.
It's horrifying.
I mean,
I'm telling you this. These guys buying this jacket, they have no hand. And now I'm looking at this robo-butt.
In some
it's
ways...
It's like something out of Videodrome.
In some ways, I feel really sad that this might be something that is the most comforting thing for a person possible.
It's extremely sad. There's no doubt about that.
But let me ask you guys, given the opportunity, would you try the hug coat?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, of course.
Wait, first,
everyone wants to be loved, Cameron.
It's amazing that there is a slang word for person who is pleased with their life outside the internet.
What?
Yeah, that's what this code is named after. Ryaju. Sorry, I'm not very good at pronouncing Japanese. Ryaju, that is slang for person who enjoys their life outside the internet. But yeah, I'll try this code on. Why not?
It just reminds me of the coat in Back to the Future where it's like, your jacket is now dry.
That sounds great.
Yeah, but also functional.
We've already got Dark Sky. You know, we're part of the way there. In 2 years, we're going to have this jacket.
I just like what a very specific scenario this guy designed this coat for. Like, this is his ultimate scenario that he's imagined where it's like, and I'm waiting at the station for her and she runs up. And she hugs me from behind, and she's happy to see me. Sorry, I kept you waiting. We're seeing this guy's basically ultimate fantasy of how a relationship would look and feel.
In jacket form.
Does this guy...
And notice that his way of fantasizing about a woman allows him to not have to even... imagine a face.
Well,
that's a lot harder to simulate with a coat.
I guess.
Gonna say it's much more difficult. And there's a video that you can watch of the coat in action. Did you watch the coat work, Chris?
No.
It's a very dramatic video. There's like a lot of pointing. It looks like a Phoenix Wright video. And then, yeah, there they are. He's got this weird belt attached to him. What is that part of it being like a girlfriend hugging you? These huge weights attached to your back.
Have you had a girlfriend? Hello.
I mean, and she just has pipes for an arm?
Mother-in-laws? Hello.
And yet they all smile and they're like very, they're all very happy and satisfied looking from
it. Is this like a common trope in anime? Like a girlfriend running and hugging you from behind? Does that happen a lot?
I don't know. Is a robo-butt a popular thing in anime?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen anime?
I guess not the right stuff. What I really like is the guy who made the robo-butt also made a kissing simulator and a virtual hugging vest. And I don't know if you guys looked at the link for the kissing simulator, but they have these little things that look like pig alarm clocks, and you kiss it, and then it sends the kiss through to another person, allowing you to transfer a kiss over distance.
I don't want to kiss a robot.
You're not. The robot's just transferring the kiss to another human.
I hate it.
They call it a kiss-inger.
What's wrong with Japan?
You know, if this makes people's lonely lives better,
if
it makes them feel better, if it's like those, like,
no.
You know those, like, love pillows that it has, like, an anime character, like, screen printed onto it?
Yes.
Have you guys seen these body pillows? What are those called?
For a long time, Amazon.com was convinced I was a woman named Jennifer and kept on recommending things like the spoon pillow, which was like a pillow with an arm that you could like wrap yourself around and pretend was hugging you.
Oh, that's sad.
maybe it's not sad. Maybe Jennifer just enjoys that sort of comfort, but's not interested in a relationship.
Jennifer's got some issues.
Well, you're Jennifer, as far
Shut
as
up.
I know.
Chris, do you own one of these pillows? Wait, do you own a spanking simulator? Chris, you're being awfully quiet.
It makes me feel better.
Chris, did you just spank your spanking simulator?
When I'm on the subway platform and I'm waiting for my fake girlfriend to arrive, I like to have a robot ass to slap.
Stop it, Chris.
No.
Oh, boy.
So. I like how the robot ass has, like, glute hydraulics that inflate independently.
Don't you want it to be realistic? I think no. If Ken... What's his name? Ken Kutagari? Is that the name of the guy who invented the PlayStation 2? Because all I want is the butt emotion engine built into this thing.
And the next thing you know, Saddam Hussein's buying up robo asses and drones to put into his rockets.
Oh boy.
That's topical.
Have we bottomed out?
No pun intended.
No, this is great stuff. I mean, this video of the bum, why does it start out all of focus? Why is the photo of it, like, dismembered? Like, they don't bother putting, like, half-pulled-down pants and a shirt over the top. It's just this cross-section of a person. I like the title in the video. Shidi. Buttock humanoid fierce. That represents emotions and visual and tactile transformation of the muscles. So see, it does represent emotions.
I like the little thing, captioned below at the bottom where it says the user may feel Shiri's fear when they trigger Shiri's twitch upon first contact.
This is really weird. Wow. Example emotions such as tension, twitch, and protrusion. How much time did this guy spend, like, dedicated to making this robo butt?
Probably a lot. Probably a lot.
Tina would love this thing. Oh, yeah. Tina from Bob's Burgers? Yeah.
Please stop making that noise.
So the project has two main points for the RoboBut. One is the innovative use of robotics technology and its purpose.
Not true. It's just a butt with balloons.
The second is to raise the argument as to what perceptions will be manifested in the minds of people who communicate with Shiri. People who are communicating with a robotic butt. So, can we buy a robot butt? How much do you think a robot butt costs? I don't know. It was a university project. Do you think he got, like, a standing ovation? Oh, my goodness. What? Chris, did you watch the whole Robo video?
No.
Watch this part, Patrick. So I would recommend skipping around to the 2:27 mark. So he's just spanking the robo butt. And then
fondling it.
He just kind of grabs and rubs the butt. The user may also feel Shiri's happiness when a gentle stroke is applied, triggering a protrusion.
What kind of protrusion?
It's a butt protrusion.
What does that
like
mean?
A set of bongos. Chris, are you watching this video?
Okay, I'm going to go to 227.
227 forward.
He's just poking him in the... Uh-huh. Okay. Now what? I spanks him. Feels very bracing after feeling a slap from the user. Uh-huh. Oh, now he's... What? What are you doing?
I find this all very upsetting.
Similarly, the user may feel Shiri's happiness when a gentle stroke is applied to him.
This is horrifying. I mean... Nice technical feat. Congratulations on the engineering.
No, it's a butt.
Nice technical butt. But Honestly.
No. Don't try and find ways to be nice to this guy.
This is horrifying.
This does look like something out of Videodrome.
Well, if you would like to experience the madness for yourself, I would highly recommend heading over to whatsthedealshow.com. There we have all of the robotic butt and little pig kissing machines and girlfriend sneaking in a hug from behind and whispering in your ear videos that any person could possibly happen. And while you're there, why don't you check out the show notes? Check out the little picture for this week, and why don't you even, at the same time, listen to back episodes? If you thought this episode was good, listen to some of the other good ones. We haven't flagged which ones are the good ones, but they're there. They're in there. They're in there somewhere. And it doesn't have to stop there. Your joy with What's the Deal show can continue. It doesn't have to end. Isn't that right, Patrick?
Yeah. You know, we tweet at WTD show. Mostly, we just, you know, all the episodes, they show up there. So if you follow us on Twitter, you'll never miss an episode. But, you know, sometimes we might have something in between, something related to Seinfeld. We might tweet something else. Liven up your Wednesday at the office. Something like that.
Hump day.
Hump day. Wednesdays, am I right? You know, or if you, you're not into Twitter, you're more into Facebook, we're also on Facebook. Same stuff. Just go to facebook.com/whatsthedealshow or just type what's the deal into the Facebook searchy thingy.
Is it a Facebook home?
I don't know, one of those.
Put it into your bobble.
And you can like us there. Or it's
take a memo in your Newton.
I don't know what that is.
Beat up Martin. Eat up Martha.
Yeah, the whole thing. We're on LinkedIn, Google Plus. We're everywhere.
We got it.
Yeah.
Check out our Orkut page.
Yeah, we're big in Brazil. MySpace, you could be in our top 8.
And always, of course, Friendster.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, you know what? It doesn't have to stop there. You could support us. Now, sure, you could give us money.
PayPal, whatsthedealshow@gmail.com.
Don't do that.
PayPal, pat at...
you could, however, help us in another way, and Chris Young's going to give you the details.
All right, here's what you do. You rate something for us out of 1 and 5. And what we need you to do, international listeners, you're included in this, we need you to rate out of 5 just what is wrong with Japan. Because, I mean, it's a 5. It's got to be a 5.
You know, Chris, we have some Japanese listeners.
And they know what I'm talking about. They know what I'm talking about. You can also go to iTunes. And you can rate our show. And if you give us 5 stars, we will send you a robot butt.
We won't do that.
It may not be the one in the video. It may be something I made.
Is it just a globe full of sand?
It'll be something, and I promise you can spank it.
2 balloons full of sand.
With like a little motor inside. Feel its fear.
You know what you can also do? You can follow us individually on Twitter. Cameron tweets at Otawong, OTAWONG. Follow him. He's hilarious on Twitter.
He's pretty
Chris
funny.
Chris does a lot of self-promotion on Twitter.
I wouldn't follow him.
At Chris Not Young.
I don't think I do a lot of self-promotion.
Constantly self-promoting himself.
Oh my god.
Buy my robot stop. Ass!
And you can follow me. I will tweet obscure computer things. At Old Patrick A. Follow us! We're the best!
More like Ruby's fallen off the rails.
That's a pretty good... I should write that down.
Check out my massive Python compiler.
Active record, am I right?
That moment before you accidentally submit something to Bucket you didn't mean to.
Ternary operator. More like burnary operator.
All right, are we done here? Someone get in a
you get my
go.
Floating point.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I tell you
insert
what.
Insert Stack Overflow pun here.
That was a good one.
Yeah. Chris, you could do some technical tweets if you stop promoting yourself.
I went out for breakfast this morning and I ordered the short Stack Overflow.
And then I was wearing the pants that simulate my girlfriend coming out from behind. And
what? What?
And what happens next, Chris?
What is this invention?
The pants, and they simulate my girlfriend coming up from behind and putting her hands inside my pants and saying,
"Oh God."
Chris, this sounds like something you actually want.
And then she whispers in my ear, "When is there going to be a new Mac Pro?"
Well, if you somehow manage to make it through to the end of this episode, you're going to love next week's episode when we watch Season 3, Episode 15, The Suicide, where we're going to see Newman in the flesh for the first time. And in this episode...
And also, one of us might commit suicide.
This episode, Jerry wants to start dating a woman, but the problem is that her aggressive boyfriend is in a coma, and Jerry's worried of what the consequences may be. George goes to see a psychic, and he gets news he doesn't like. So he gives up a trip and sends Kramer in his place. A pretty interesting episode. One I thought was pretty funny, at least in my mind as I remember it.
Drake's coffee cake.
Yeah, it's a big part, the way it crumbles. I think it'll be good. Good episode. Yeah. Good episode this week. I thought we did a good job.
Yeah, we're the best.
We covered it all, and my voice is dropping out now.
Yeah. Team, what's the deal?
I can't laugh the way I normally do. It's just, there's nothing there.
It's because we're not funny.
Speak for yourself.
We're pretty funny.
I mean, we're basically hilarious.
Almost as funny as the show we're talking about.
In many ways, we're superior.
Because we're an add-on to that show, and that show's already really good. And we're just adding on to that.
We're like the expansion pack onto the original.
Seinfeld Brood War.
We're like opposing force for Half-Life.
I'm not going to lie. My robot butt is just my butt.
All right,
and there's
well.
A protrusion.
As always, a hearty thank you from Christopher Young.
Feel my fear.
Patrick Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
And myself, Cameron Wong. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be with you again next week.
Oh, God.
If you choose to come back.
Chris, we don't want to hear about your robot butt.
Why did we have a robo-bat butt on the show?
Robo-bat? Like, would you say robo-bat?
To be fair, that's my fault. I just saw it, and I was very distracted. I couldn't stop thinking about that robo-bat, because he works me hard.